For 36 years, the Goldman Environmental Prize has celebrated everyday heroes who are showing us that every action has the power to turn apathy into positive change for the environment. Heroes like Bastiana Gurri and Olsi Nika, who helped create Europe's first Wild River National Park. Visit us at goldmanprize.org to discover the stories of this year's Goldman Environmental Prize winners. And learn how when it comes to protecting our planet, the doing makes the difference.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for members. Signature Select Classic Ham, shank half or whole, bone in while supplies last, just 89 cents per pound. Enjoy 1 pound strawberries or 6 ounce blueberries, raspberries, or blackberries. Buy two, get two free of equal or lesser value when you buy four. And mix and match Nabisco snack crackers, Ritz crackers, Cheetos, Doritos, Tostitos, or Sun Chips, selected varieties and sizes. Buy two, get two for free when you buy four. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Good morning, everybody, and happy Tuesday. Happy tax day. It's April 15th, and it is also Grizz play-in day as they take on the, I think it's okay to call them, I think it's the Hated Warriors, don't you think, Jeffrey?
I would most certainly agree.
Take on the Hated Warriors tonight. Now, today on the radio show, we're going to have Chris Harrington's going to join us straight up at 10 o'clock. And then, because it is Tuesday, we're going to fish on Friday on Tuesday. He will join us to talk about who knows what. I suspect the economy may be one of the things that will come up. But I think there are other things on the list as well. So Fishman is going to join us in the second hour. That's the show. Chris Harrington, then Fishman. First hour is us. So I was driving in today, Jeffrey, and they were talking about unsportsmanlike, and maybe I give them more credit than I should. I never used to talk about the show, right?
Well, they've been talking about Ja a lot.
When it was, what was it called before that?
So we had Keyshawn, Jay Will, and Zubin.
I almost never quoted them, right?
Yeah, I think that might be why it's not anymore.
But today I was driving it, and yes, they talk a lot about Ja. But I was driving in today, and Evan Cohen was talking about tonight's game, and everyone agrees that of the play-in games, this is easily the most compelling, right?
Yeah, it's got names.
It's got names. It's got Stefan. It's got John.
Yeah,
you know. So, easily the most compelling game, and the Warriors on it, practically any game the Warriors would be, and let's not give too much credit to the Grizzlies.
Yeah, absolutely,
right now. Any game the Warriors are going to be in is going to be an incredibly high profile game. But then you throw in the Grizzlies. And Ja Morant, I don't know if you saw this, Jeffrey, but in jersey sales, it is sort of interesting. He may go up and down in terms of the trajectory of his career, not an all-star this year, whatnot. But Ja still number 8 in jersey sales this year. So you got Ja Morant, superstar as well. And the other thing is that Chris Harrington did his, it was 28 best moments of the season, of the Grizzlies season. And, you know, Ja only played about half the season, right? So
yep.
You're like...
He played 50 games. We looked it up yesterday.
He played 50 games. So you're looking at this, of the top five of the 28 best moments of the 2024-2025 season, how many do you think were Ja Morant?
I'm going to say three.
Four.
Four of the five, yeah.
Four of the five were Ja Morant, and the other one was Tony Allen night.
Okay.
So literally, and that was two.
Right.
And I don't think you can. I actually think there's a fair argument that the best moment of this Grizzly season was Tony Allen night.
I agree.
You were there, right?
No, I didn't go to this one. So, I watched it on TV when they did.
But it was a signature night. It was maybe the most memorable night. It was certainly a feel good night. And so, but I don't think you can make that. It's got to be a pretty demoralizing season for something that doesn't really relate to the season to be the number one highlight of the season.
Yeah.
Even though it may well have been the number one highlight of the season. Any idea what you think, by the way, the best moment would be?
So I was trying to catalog it. Is it a game winner?
Well, it's not a game winner. I'll give you the top five. Here we go. Let's do with a countdown. Number five was, remember the 26-point, 10-rebound, 14-assist performance against Milwaukee where he had one assist from his ass with multiple ball fakes?
Yes.
Do you remember that one?
Yes.
It was an unbelievable game, and 8 of his 14 assists lob passes for dunks, including ball faking from his butt. That was really tremendous. Four was against the Celtics in the win of the year at Boston, just when you were learning that Ja doesn't dunk anymore, he dunks on Porzingis. He does the double clutch reverse adjustment to avoid Porzingis and dunks at Boston. That was four. Number three was the two winners that he had to win and then win again. Well, it was to tie. He had one shot to tie and then another shot to win in the final minute against Minnesota.
Yep.
You remember that one?
I think that was the MLK Day game.
That big win. No, was it the MLK Day? It was in Minnesota. It was in Minnesota.
Okay, yeah.
It was in Minnesota.
I think those were like right around each other. I want to say that those two games were like within.
Two was Tony Allen, and number one was the two 360 layups in the same game.
Okay, I was thinking, is it the layups?
Yes. That was also, by the way, we're on the topic of Ja and his jersey. That's also the most viewed video of the NBA this year. 286 million.
He was trying to make layups cool again.
Views. So of course they were talking about tonight's game because it's the most compelling game. It's the most compelling play-in game. It's an unbelievably compelling game. But in the course of that conversation, Chris Canty said, "The Grizzlies aren't good." That's what he said, and he said it as sort of a matter of fact, right? And then he reached for the stats that we know. He wanted the stats we know about the last time they beat a playoff team in the West, you know, whatever. I was listening to the Hoop Collective, which is a ESPN podcast, and they said that they haven't won a game against a playoff team in the West since, you know, because we kept track of the 12 straight losses to teams above 500, and then when they broke that streak, it was against Detroit.
Yeah.
Right? So he's like, they're not good. They're not good. Which gets me to what I think is the point of tonight's game. A lot of times in this world, you hear teams and players say, nobody thought we could win. Everyone was against us. No one believed in us but us.
Yeah.
And most times, that is a wild exaggeration and sometimes an outright lie. Who famously used this? Georgia football or something?
Kirby did like Dog Hater 69 said that you were going to go 7-5.
Yeah.
Something like that.
So it's just a cliche deployed by teams and usually untrue.
I would say probably the most common cliche in sports.
Yeah. I mean, backs against the wall is a big one.
Next man up.
Next man up is that, and there's more circumstances for next man up. You know, next man, because people are getting injured in all sports all the time.
Sure.
But anyway, this is a big one. But I happen to think it's true tonight. And, you know, I wrote a column about this today, about the potential for tonight to be able to shift the narrative about these Grizzlies in a way that I don't know any other single game has in the history of the franchise. And that may be that may be its own exaggeration. But, you know, I can summon up other games when the Grizzlies won as an underdog. Famously, there's been a lot. 2011 against the Spurs, game one. You know, like yep. They go in there and they get the first playoff win in franchise history. No one thought they were going to win that game, but they did. The play-in game against Golden State, 22?
I think 21.
21?
I believe it's 21.
21?
Yeah, it's
play-in
21.
Game against Golden State. It was at Golden State.
Yep.
They weren't supposed to win that game.
No, I mean, I think they were bigger underdogs that game than they are tonight.
They were. I don't think so, actually. I looked it up yesterday. They were like 6.5 or 7 tonight. They were only 3.5, I think, in that game. But here's one. In game two at Golden State in 2015, Golden State had a 22-game winning streak, home winning streak, a 22-game home winning streak. Steph Curry was being given the MVP award that night. Right, it was going to be a grand celebratory night for Steph Curry. They interrupted the game to give him the MVP award, or maybe it was before the game. Mike Conley had a broken face. The Grizzlies had lost game one easily, not in a non-competitive fashion, and that point spread was 11 points. Much bigger underdogs than they are tonight. There's lots of times the Grizzlies have gone into games and won as an underdog. But the difference is, even for Memphians, I think, you're like, okay, those teams were different, man. We believed in those teams. Like, those teams had Tony Allen on it. Those teams were grit and grind. Even that earlier version of this Grizzlies team felt tough-minded.
I was going to say, the first thing that pops into my mind is you just think of those teams being tougher.
Yeah. And so, here's the truth. It's not just that Chris Canty doesn't believe in this team and says, Grizzlies aren't good. The reason that the vibes are the way they are around this team, not just around the country, but in Memphis, is no one thinks this team is good. For good reason, honestly. Because what we have seen in the black third of the season has been a mid-lottery team.
Yeah. I mean, it's clearly a sub-500 basketball team.
It's clearly, it is over an extended period of time. Listen, I cherry-picked the stats, and I can tell you that over the last five games, the Grizzlies are 3-2 and the Warriors are 2-3.
Yeah, there you go.
Over the last third of the season, since the trade deadline, it's not close.
Yeah. I mean, I looked it up yesterday. One is a very good team,
and one is a crap team.
In the last 20 games, the Grizzlies have the third worst fourth quarter offense, which goes to what we've been watching.
Right.
And it's like them and the Wizards.
So no, most people don't think they're going to win. I don't think they're going to win. And it's why, I mean, I tried to hear John talking about this game yesterday, and I saw someone tweeting about this. Man, John, you're just so negative. But that's because there is a negative feeling about it. I don't think many people think they're going to win tonight.
I will say this, though. I think of the possible matchups that they could have had.
Oh, yes.
I actually think this is the one I would have preferred.
We talked about this yesterday. Better than the Clippers. So much better than the Clippers.
And I would not want to play the Timberwolves right now.
That gets to my point that I think it is an extraordinary opportunity to shift the narrative.
I mean, I get the game was at home, but if you think about, okay, the teams that they could have played, the most competitive game was the game against the Warriors. Like, yeah, it ends up, and you also had to have the Herculean effort from Steph. Not saying that he can't do it again.
This version, now mind you, that team did have Jalen Wells, but otherwise, basically the same. This version of this Grizzlies team and the Jimmy Butler version of the Warriors was an incredibly close game. In the final 2 minutes, Jaren fouls out. Jaren was, When Jaren was on the floor, the Grizzlies were winning that game.
Yeah.
When Zach Edey was on the floor, the Grizzlies won that game. Asante Aldamo was like negative 23 for the night or something. But it required 52 points from Steph.
Yeah.
And they were perfect from the free, didn't miss a free throw shot.
Yeah.
Like they were, and Kevon Looney was nailing a dropping in the three
pointer.
Kevon
Looney, I think, like, hit his like first three in like a decade.
He had hit one earlier.
The game before. Yeah, right.
To the point, I really do think the vibes around this team are pretty bad. But think of what you can do tonight. Everyone's going to be watching. Think of what Jaren, who now this whole thing is in. Jaren can go out. They don't have any bigs on that team. They don't have any decent bigs on that team. Jaren's been good against them all season long. Jaren can be dominant tonight. Jaren can stamp himself as the all-NBA player he is. He can dominate Draymond Green. He can go for 28 or 32 or four blocks or like. Jaren can have a massive night tonight, should have a massive night tonight, and remind people around the country of what we've known all year long, is that he's turning into one of the best players in the NBA.
Yeah.
Ja Morant, who is only now known for his, sadly, or increasingly known for his stuff, including the celebrations, whether you love them or hate them, he can go out there, and he has been brilliant against the Warriors. They have no one who can guard Ja. He has historically been brilliant against the Grizzlies, against the Warriors. He's historically been brilliant in the playoffs. He can go out and remind people that he is the most exciting player in the NBA. And forget playoff Jimmy. Let's see playoff Ja. Ja can do that tonight. The Grizzlies have been dismissed for good reason as frauds this year, even by fans in Memphis, as soft this year, even by fans in Memphis. They can't win in California. They can't beat a good team. They can't beat a team over 500. They can't. You can go in and you can win in California. You can beat a good team. You can beat a team over 500. Like, you do all of that tonight. Take what people are saying about you and shove it. Doesn't mean, by the way, that the other things weren't true. They haven't been able to beat a good team.
Right.
But on the biggest stage, you can strike a blow against all of that, or you can knuckle down and capitulate and be the version of the Grizzlies that people have literally no respect for, which is what we've seen recently, which is where we are. That, to me, is what is at stake tonight. Tuomas Iisalo. How about the opportunity for him going against Steve Kerr and the Warriors on the road for his first playoff game? If he can match wits and emerge with a victory, again, I don't think it will determine whether he gets the job. I don't honestly think W's and L's in this postseason will determine whether he gets the job. Like Jason asked me yesterday, he said, "Is there anything that can happen here that will make you not, if you were the Grizzlies, not do a search at least, not talk to other people?" And my answer to that is, I don't think it has as much to do with the W's and L's as I think it does with the relationships. Yes, if Jaren, Ja, and Dez all came to me and said, "We want Iisalo to be our coach next year," I think that might make me not have a search. You know, if they're all in on him, even then I might make some calls, right? Get some ideas. But it's not, but still, from a credibility standpoint, both locally and nationally, the opportunity for Iisalo is, I think, immense. Zach Edey, who has had an up and down season. He's been terrific lately. They got no bigs. Zach Edey can be dominant tonight. And it is, by the way, if I say all this, I don't even really have to talk myself into the idea that they can win tonight. Because to your point, it's the best matchup you could have asked for.
Yeah.
And, I mean, is there any team in the play-in that you would have, in the playoffs, that you would have rather played in a one-game play-in?
No. Of the available, no.
Even if, pick any team in the West that if you could have played, including the ones who have playoff spots, and you could have played them in a one-game play-in. I don't think there's a team you'd rather play.
Because, like, my first instinct was, well, the Timberwolves have the Grizzly heebie-jeebies, but without Brandon Clark, that's a...
Yeah, I don't know that they do have the Glazers.
I mean, the only other one is, and this is kind of why I think it's also an important game, like, maybe
Denver?
You can talk yourself now into the Rockets, because...
The Rockets? But again, on the road, would you rather play the Rockets on the road or Golden State? I might almost rather play Golden State.
I think from a basketball perspective, I'd rather play Golden State.
I mean, I know it's playoff Jimmy, although he may be gimpy playoff Jimmy, and I know it's Steph, and I know it's Draymond, and I know it's on the road, and I know they're favored by 6.5.
Yeah.
This is a Warriors team that just lost a must-win game at home to the Clippers, and before that, lost a must-win game at home to the San Antonio Spurs without Wembanyama.
Yeah.
This isn't some game they were, you know, whatever, mailing it in for. This is a massive game against the Spurs at home, and they lost. Their last two home games they've lost, including one to the Spurs. You're telling me it's impossible for the Grizzlies to go in there and win that game? That's ridiculous. So when you take the level of challenge, which is a challenge, but then present it against the level of opportunity, I think the opportunity is absolutely massive tonight.
I think it's the only one game that could truly salvage the season and how everyone feels.
Okay, so I asked that question because the headline on my column was something about this is how the Grizzlies can save the season in a single game.
Yep.
How much does it, if they win tonight, I think it is an overstatement to say it saves the season. If they go on, win tonight, and then lose in four straight to Houston, I don't think it, quote unquote, saves the season. I think it gives you a moment of one at least moment of redemption. I think you then I'll say this: if you can win tonight and then win at least two games against Houston, go to take them to six. I think that makes the season feel very different.
Yeah, I mean, I hear you. My big deal is sports is about moments.
Right.
And this provides a moment.
You get this moment.
And I think the other big part of this for me is if you were to win this game, we also avoid the awkward, what are we rooting for?
Oh, that's a huge. But by the way, it's funny. Even then, people just don't. We have a loyal listener, and I appreciate all of the loyal listeners. And he congratulated me today on my column today, said I nailed it, whatever. He said, I'm going to ignore what you said the Grizzlies are supposed to do if they lose this game. Meaning he's going to ignore my thoughts on the game against Sacramento or Dallas that could come if the Grizzlies lose tonight.
Yep.
And once again, I think people are misinterpreting what I said. I have never said that if the Grizzlies lose tonight, they should or are supposed to lose to Dallas or Sacramento. I want them to play with 100% integrity, try to win desperately because it's a freaking play-in game, and that's as a player what you're supposed to do, and that's as an organization what you're supposed to do. I would expect nothing less. I will not be rooting for the team to give anything other than 100% to try to win that game. I will be happier if they lose nonetheless.
Yeah. You've only discussed it from your rooting
interest.
I've only
discussed it from what my... Not what I think they should do. Only my preference for what I would like the result of the game to be after they give their all to try to win. I would prefer they lose that game because I don't need to see them play Kansas or Oklahoma City four times and lose their draft pick. And by the way, I got some pushback on this again, like... We're back to do you remember that era in Grizzlies history when people are like, I don't care about the draft pick because Chris Wallace is going to screw it up anyway?
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
It was basically,
it was literally
the Jaren draft was the one that I remember.
Was it the Jaren draft?
Yeah.
It was also like before the Jaren draft, Ja draft, whatever else. People are like, I don't care about the draft picks. Screw the draft pick. They're going to screw it up anyway. And then what did they do with the draft pick? They drafted an all NBA player named Jaren Jackson Jr. They drafted a all-world player named Ja Morant. They drafted... Don't tell me draft picks. Just because a lot of draft picks stink Don't tell me draft picks don't matter. You know whose draft picks didn't matter until it did? The Washington Commanders.
Yep.
They had a whole bunch of bad drafts. And then you know what they had? A franchise player in the draft.
Yeah.
Because, by the way, they had the second pick in the draft. If they had had the fifth pick in the draft, they wouldn't have gotten him.
They had the third pick.
Oh, they had the third pick.
No, that's what I'm saying.
If they had the third pick, that was Drake May. Yeah. They wouldn't have gotten him. Draft picks 100% matter. Where do you think Desmond Bane came from? Where do you think Ja came from? Where do you think Jaron came from? Draft picks matter. And that is still true even if you screw up the Zaire Williams draft pick. The next draft pick still matters. And yes, Jeffrey is of a view like, I need to add another young player. Fine. Draft picks matter as assets.
But it's something
you can trade it.
It's simple as going into the offseason with an asset or with no asset.
Exactly. So, and whatever. But I totally respect those, and I expect most, as we've said before, to be rooting for the Grizzlies to beat Sacramento or Dallas and knock yourself out. Like, as fans, we can want what we want. It's fine. You can want what you want as fans. Some people, when they get to a certain point in a college football season and their team has lost three straight, they start wanting their team to lose so the coach will be fired. Right? That's another one, right? And you're rooting. Yes, you're rooting against your team.
The most angry I've been after a Giants game in a while was this year when they played the Colts and they beat the Colts and they went from having the number one pick to now the Giants are going to be at three.
Infuriating.
It was maddening.
Infuriating. But that doesn't mean the Giants should have been mailing it in. Jeffrey didn't expect the players
themselves. No, I didn't want the players to quit. But right.
It's just ridiculous. So no one is saying. But that's the other point. Tonight, by winning tonight, we avoid that whole miserable, and it is a miserable. The worst thing about tanking to me is the debate about tanking.
Correct.
Like, oh, I hate that. I hate it. So we avoid all that, too. Like, I think there is a massive, massive amount at stake tonight, particularly because I don't know what this offseason is going to bring. But if you look at what the Grizzlies have and the flexibility they have, I think there's a pretty good chance that they won't do that much. If they trade Ja, it would only be because Ja would be demanding a trade. It would be insane to trade Ja. Look at Chris's 28. By the way, read it because it's really interesting and fun to relive the 28 moments. But I swear to God, he played 50 games, and I didn't count exactly, but well over half of Chris's moments were Ja moments. The most entertaining moments of the season. In a season in which Ja only played 50 games, Ja still dominated the most entertaining moments. Can you imagine how much fun were they to watch when Ja wasn't playing?
Not much.
Jaron and Dez. Yuck. No disrespect to either of them, but yuck. So they're not trading Ja unless he demands to be traded. They're certainly not trading Jaron. He's the fulcrum of this team. Hopefully they're going to be extending Jaron. And Dez, I'll be honest, he may not be worth his salary. Good player, right? We'll see.
The only thing that you could talk me into is because his contract is not tied to the salary cap, his contract's a fixed number. Because remember, that was the whole deal. Right. They announced it as a max, but it's like, it wasn't really. It's a fixed. You could talk me into, with the cap continuously going up, someone goes, that's not a bad
possible.
Deal.
Possible. Maybe, but they're not.
But that's, I'm stretching there. You know what I mean?
And then here, you know what else? They won 48 games with Ja playing 50 and with two rookies as starters. You bring those same three stars back and those rookies now back as second-year players and maybe a little tweaks around them. That's what they're going to do. That's the most likely thing they're going to do. The most likely thing they're going to do is tweaks around the margin. And that summer will feel very different in terms of momentum going forward. If they beat Golden State tonight and they either beat the Rockets or go deep in a series against the Rockets.
Yeah.
Right? You'll have moments that you'll feel good about with Zach Edey. You'll have moments where you feel good about the Stars. You point out the moments. This is a massive, massive opportunity tonight. Can it salvage the season? Save the season? Maybe that is a stretch in and of itself. But if one game ever can, this is the game that could. And it's because of the stage. It's because of the opponent. Beating Sacramento or Dallas, for losing this game and then beating Sacramento or Dallas on Friday does not do that.
Well, I mean, like, even, like, think about it in these terms. I get it, this isn't a possibility, but if they would play the Clippers, I think that would be a better win.
It would be a better win, but it wouldn't have the emotional impact.
At
it
all.
It would not have the emotional impact. This is dramatic. Can you imagine the fun of sending? Here's the other little great advantage of this. You are sending the Warriors into the play-in game against Sacramento or Dallas.
For the right to play Oklahoma City.
And then you're sending them into the jaws of death against Oklahoma City.
It's either, like, you, it would be, you're either giving them the opportunity to go get beat by Oklahoma City or to miss the playoffs entirely.
It's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. And again, I don't think it is.
I mean, I will tell you this. Might be the first time I'll listen to the Draymond Green podcast.
After they get bounced.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it is a, it's just a massive game. It's a massive opportunity. It is tonight. We'll be carried here on these very airwaves.
Pre-game at 8:30, 9 o'clock tip.
Oh, do you have butterflies? I'll get them.
So it's not butterflies, but it is the, because I think butterflies come when you really, like, in your heart of hearts think that they're going to win.
So, okay, so we explained all that. Beyond the numbers.
But I am pumped.
Beyond the numbers about they're not going to win because they never win these games,
yeah,
right, whatever. What specifically about this game makes you think they're not going to win?
I if you made me guess tonight, I think the game's going to play out a lot like the Nuggets game last Friday did, where you're going to sit there and look up and go, maybe. But the depth and the, like, in the end, it's like, I think
it's funny. They don't play Jonathan Kuminga anymore.
Right.
Like, that they're deep enough that he's just kind of fallen out of the rotation, you know?
And to me, it's more of, I just don't think the Grizzlies have enough. Like, I think the three guys are going to show up, and I think they're going to play pretty well. But I think we'll see in the end, like, there's just not enough defense.
And then the other problem is there's a really good interview that Drew Hill did with Isolo in the Daily Memphian today that I'd urge you to read. And he was talking about Steph, of course, but he was also talking about the shot quality,
sure,
that they got, right, in that last game. And the Grizzlies just don't defend the perimeter well. And then particularly without Brandon Clark and Jalen Wells, and it's partly what Chris was talking about, it's not just they're a better three-point shooting team. They are going to get very good three-point shots,
yes,
against this Grizzlies team. I think if the Grizzlies are to win, we will be talking about Scottie Pippen Jr.'s defense tomorrow. You know,
well, maybe, like, Vince. Maybe they put Vince on Steph. You know,
but I think Scottie Pippen Jr. will play a lot. Will play a lot against Steph too. I think the Grizzlies are not well equipped.
Yeah, I mean, I think to
match against that offense, and it's what, like, what do you, like, would you play Luke Kennard?
I mean, Friday night, he at least looked better in terms of, like, he let it rip, he hit a shot. Like, I mean, I think you have to at least try. I think you do the move of, all right, he's got his normal rotation. If you see he doesn't have it, then you adjust from there, but I still think, like, he's experienced enough that I think you want him in there.
There were a lot of things that the Warriors did well in their last game. You're like, they can't do that again. Like, Steph isn't going to go for 52, and they're not going to be perfect from the line, and Jaren's not going to foul out, and all these things that happened that contributed to their win. I can also tell you that Draymond isn't going to go 1 of 7 from three. He's hit 30, as Chris pointed out in his piece, his preview today, since the All-Star break, he's at 30% from three. If he does that.
Yeah, but, like, that's still not good.
It's not good. No, but last time it was 1 of 7.
Yeah, but, like,
in order for the Grizzlies to be in that game, you needed Draymond to miss and miss and miss and miss and miss and miss.
Yeah, or you just need, like, Steph, who's an all-time great and is an unbelievable shooter, you just need him also to not go for 52.
Right.
Like,
yes.
Have him, instead of him going, what I think he went, like, he went 8 for 8.
It was unbelievable. But again, it was the shot. It wasn't some accident. It was they were getting
low, and the guy
getting,
that was on him,
it was getting they were great, getting great shots.
And the guy that you used to guard him is not
no longer
there
with us. So, all right, we're going to take a break. We got Harrington to talk about this again at 10 o'clock, and Fishman after that. Fish on Friday, on Tuesday. I got an email yesterday from a guy who got a hole in one. And what did he tell me? He said, I'm going to be going to the frame corner. I'm glad y'all are getting it now. Whether it's the hole-in-one that you need to commemorate and have on your wall forever, or whether it's the wedding photos, whether it's the arrow. Ugh, I must be allergic to arrow. I must be allergic to arrowheads. Whether it's the arrowhead collection or whatever it is, if you want it framed beautifully so you'll have it forever, head on into the frame corner, 5035. Park Avenue. You can remember the 50 part because it's their 50th year of doing this. 5035 Park Avenue. It's the Frame Corner, framecornermemphis.com. Specialize in custom framing. They have beautiful frames anyway you can walk in and buy. But that's what they do and have been doing it brilliantly for 50 years. Frame Corner Memphis, 5035 Park Avenue. We're going to take a break. Back in a moment, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Green from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. We'll talk more about the Grizzlies and their game tonight when Chris Harrington joins the show straight up at 10 o'clock. Then we got Fish on Friday on Tuesday after that. Jeffrey, Jason and John asked me this question when I was on him with him yesterday. What program has the brighter future, the Grizzlies, Memphis Tiger basketball, or Memphis Tiger football?
Brighter future. I think I would probably say the Grizzlies because they still do have, like, they still have three guys that are very good. If you can get them healthy and playing together, like, that's still a better core. And my biggest concern with the other two is the changing landscape.
Well, that's the thing. In the end, well, that's why I said that I had the same answer, not because of anything having to do with the current coaching staff or management or anything else. It's just, there are structural impediments to the Grizzlies' success because they're a small market team. Stars don't want it, won't come here as free agents, whatever else. There are challenges they have. But relatively speaking, they're on the same they have the same ability to pay financially, if not the same resources. Like, they operate under the same salary cap rules and the same draft rules, the same whatever else. So there are, no, they don't have the advantages that the Lakers have or whatnot, but look at what Oklahoma City's doing, right? Look at what Cleveland's doing. You don't have to be a big market team, particularly anymore in the league, to succeed. And so there are structural impediments, but they are not the same as the structural impediments for Memphis Tiger football. Simply can't compete at a for a national championship. They can't. And Memphis Tiger basketball, it's getting harder and harder and harder. The Grizzlies, in the end, if they draft better than anyone else, trade better than anyone else, analyze players better than as coach, they can absolutely still win a national championship. They don't have the structural impediments that
I think I'd say it even a little differently. Structurally, there's nothing that prevents the Grizzlies from winning. They have disadvantages.
Yes.
Like, they have things not working for them, but they don't have structural, barriers that prevent them from being as good as the Lakers, the Warriors.
Yeah, exactly right. So I think that's the answer. And speaking of the changing landscape, gets me to my next question, which is, in the Nico Tennessee divorce, as both sides were sizing up, I'm going to go ahead and say that both should have known their alternatives. Right. When you're making any kind of decision like this, if you're an employer and you're firing an employee or something, like, in the end, you have to know what the alternatives are. Right. And so for Tennessee, when they parted with Nico, they should have known what their alternatives were at quarterback. Right. And for Nico, when he parted with Tennessee, they should have known what their alternatives were as places for landing spots. Who do you think did a better job of sussing out their alternatives, Tennessee or Nico?
I think Tennessee.
Discuss.
So I don't think Tennessee was caught off guard. I mean, there's now reports that Nico tried to renegotiate before the playoff.
Right.
So I think they knew. And, like, you also have to be honest with yourself. Nico's at Tennessee because Tennessee paid him the most money.
I'm going to interrupt you there. I'm going to read this great paragraph from Andy Staples.
Yes.
It was well known during his recruitment out of high school that this was the biggest bag situation. So no one should be surprised that before his junior season, it remained the biggest bag situation. It's like the old Chris Rock line about Siegfried and Roy. That Tiger didn't go crazy. That Tiger went Tiger.
Yeah.
Tennessee coaches and officials knew exactly what they were doing when they signed him. They shouldn't have been shocked that a bag getter went bag getter.
And to be fair, I don't think Tennessee really was.
No, they got him for a reason. It wasn't because he loves the Smokies.
Right.
Right? It's because he wanted the biggest bag. By the way, most of us do.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not. Right, right.
I'm not faulting him. I just also think, I think his dad is essentially operating as his agent, and I don't think he is a professional agent.
Well, that's the question. It will be interesting now to see. And again, these aren't public documents. We don't get to see the contract, the NIL deal that he will sign with his next team. But I don't think it's necessarily promising. Literally, one of the schools, and this is relevant to Memphis, one of the schools that is said to be in the hunt is Tulane.
Yes, because, and the irony of that is, Tulane lost Mensah to Duke, and that was the story that was reported, like $4 million. And supposedly, Nico's dad saw that, and that's when he's like, well, he's worth $4
million. Oh, that was the
I think the biggest problem is, I think Nico's dad doesn't know real numbers. I think he sees like what people fire off on Twitter, which I honestly think most of the times are agent numbers,
right,
and they're inflated. It doesn't mean that they're like 100% wrong, but I think he's, I don't think he knows exactly.
You and I discussed yesterday
how this is working.
This may or may not contribute to structural change, legislation, or anything else, right? Do you think, though, that if in the end, Nico either has to take less money or lands in, and this would be true, if he went to Tulane, people roll their eyes because he would be in a much less attractive position.
Sure.
Right? I mean, with all due respect, he'd be playing in the AAC for Tulane rather than playing in the SEC for Tennessee. Right? So a much less attractive position.
I'll say this at this point. I think it is on almost certainty he is going to be on a worse team than he was going to be on.
Will this humbling prove to be a cautionary tale for others?
I'm going to say probably not. Because
I think no.
Here's
People
the other
don't want
thing.
To hear cautionary tales.
Like, let's say he goes to Tulane. I think he's going to be pretty good. Like, I've watched AAC defenses. I think he's going to be pretty good. And you know what he's going to do again? Go back in the portal.
After this year, he'll go back in the portal.
Like, if he does that, like, yeah.
Well, it'll be interesting. That will certainly be interesting to see.
And honestly, if it is a cautionary tale, the only lesson that people will learn is make sure you have a real agent.
In other portal news in basketball, Julius Thedford, former Cordova player, went to Western Kentucky, where he was all conference, even though he got hurt. He dislocated his kneecap and ligament damage and whatever else. So he missed a bunch of the season, but averaged 12 points and 4 rebounds for Western Kentucky. So he joins Ashton Hardaway and Quante Berry as incomers for the University of Memphis. Do you have any particular insight onto?
I have no insight, but Heard and I talked yesterday after the show, and he said he's a good player.
Well,
so
that's good. Okay, other bits of news. Again, Chris is going to join us straight up at 10 o'clock. TV numbers are in for Rory. Did you see these?
Yes, I did.
12 million?
Yeah, and I think it peaked at 17, I believe.
It was average of 12, highest final round in 7 years. Does that take us back? I mean, is that Tiger?
So the problem with Tiger is Tiger, they had to move the round up for weather. The storms were coming in. So, like, Tiger teed off at, like, 8 a.m., 9 a.m., something like that.
What?
And so because it's early.
What, when did he? You mean this
the
is?
The 2019.
In 2019.
The 2019, like, the Tiger win. Like, the Tiger's 86,
right.
If you will.
Yeah.
That one, the tee times were early. So that always is going to affect ratings.
And like, so this that one did beat not. That. This was better than that. Is that was this was better than that?
This was better than that.
This
yes,
was better than that. So that was great, or great to see. JD Vance dropped the trophy. Did you see this at the White House?
I saw the headline. I've not seen the clip.
In the end, the trophy came apart.
Yeah,
and he ended up holding the base and dropped the base. So there's that bit of news. Here's one that you're going to enjoy. Shador Sanders, private workout for the New York Giants. Shador Sanders, private workout for the New York Giants. The other news around Shador Sanders is that we're now learning that Derek Carr may or may not be able to play this year. And so a lot of the mocks have Shador Sanders now going to the Saints at number 9. Your thoughts?
I'm going to be surprised if the Giants take Shador at 3. Now, could you talk me into a scenario where you get the Aaron Rodgers and he starts falling and then maybe they decide to move up? But I would be surprised if the Giants take him. I think the Saints is, especially when you start reading people out of New Orleans, it seems like the Saints are locking in on Shador.
And what do you think of that?
I don't hate it. It's a dome. I do think it's a friendly place to play. I think it's a bad division in general, so like you're not really ever that far away from being good. And I mean, I can envision a world where Shador is the best quarterback in this draft. I don't think that's that insane.
Well, we talked about this last week. We looked at the last 20 years.
Yeah.
How often is the quarterback that has taken number one? In other words, people have real conviction that this is the best quarterback.
Right.
How often is the quarterback that has taken number one turn out to be the best quarterback in the draft? And the answer is less than 50% of the time. And this feels like a draft where there are real questions about number one to begin with. This feels like a draft where it is maybe even more likely.
I mean, Mike Sanford was on with me Friday, and he was former coach at Western Kentucky, and he's been all around. Like, he's adamant that Shador's the best quarterback.
One of the things that's interesting is people talk about his IQ, like his football IQ and his accuracy, right?
Yeah.
The problem with that is he also just clearly holds on to the ball too long.
Yeah, he
so how do those things intersect? Because normally the quarterback who holds on the ball too long is waiting for receivers to break. It doesn't have, you know, a ability to process and accuracy like Shador supposedly does have.
So when he holds on to the ball, he's holding on to the ball to try and hit home runs. But he's not. To me, he's different than, like, Milroe. And if you watch Milroe, Milroe is, like, it's a home run or nothing. Like, he doesn't see anything else other than the field. Shador, when, like, Shador has to go, like, if they're in the two-minute drill, he's not holding onto the ball. Like, he knows how to get rid of it. It seems like it's more selective of when he decides to hold onto the ball.
All right. And then the last thing I wanted to bring up before we get to Chris Harrington is last week, Jeffrey came to me with some truly disturbing news. Jeffrey told me that there were
rumors. I did stress.
Yeah, I did stress. If you can clarify.
I took it to you, the newsman.
He said, he said.
Mainly because I needed you to find out if it was true or not.
There's a rumor that the Belmont Grill is closing. Now, mind you, I only go to the Belmont Grill two or three times a year.
But you cherish those two or three times.
But I take comfort in its presence there. And, like, literally in the story that I'm about to read you, there's a picture of the hamburger, and it's on French bread.
Mm.
Are you looking at this picture?
Oh, yeah.
It is such a great hamburger. I really think.
I don't have to look at a picture to. I don't
picture
have to look
it.
At
it's in your head.
The Belmont's menu's ingrained in my head.
I mean, I think the Huey's burger is great. Like, there's other great hamburgers, but the Belmont burger is exceptional. My kids used to get the French dip. They love the French dip.
Don't sleep on the straight-up steak sandwich.
And Jeffrey is an advocate for the steak sandwich.
And then the weekend, you got the prime rib
but
sandwiches.
But in the Memphis Flyer, they actually addressed the rumor. Contrary to rumors going around, I think it was Michael Donahue, Belmont Grill isn't going anywhere. We're not closing, said Belmont owner Jeff Anderson, but he says we may be selling soon. It will remain the Belmont Grill, he says, and that's all he can say right now. But he reiterates they're not closing. So there you go. Here's the thing, Jeffrey, though. If they sell it, is it still the Belmont Grill? And by the way, remember when the Rail Garden, oh, we're not closing. We're not closing. It's going to nope, they're gone.
I will say the key difference in that situation to me is they stopped operating. Belmont's not stopped operating.
Oh, I see. In other words, there it was a situation where they would have had to come back.
Correct.
Whereas here there's no Belmont is still serving those delicious burgers.
Yes.
So get on into the Belmont today and show them your support. And by the way, if you haven't had a Belmont burger, it's dark in there. And I find sometimes I like that. It can be a little chilly in there. They've got the AC cranked.
They definitely pump it in.
They crank in the AC. So if you like a nice, crisp atmosphere, but the food is great.
It's unbelievable.
The food is great. I think it's a tremendous burger. So go on in and see our friends. At the Belmont, and that is not a spot that comes from our hearts, Jeffrey, doesn't it?
1,000%.
1,000%. All right, Chris Harrington coming up next. If you were selling your house, what a time to sell your house. Like every house right now, in this perfect weather, it's going to look perfect. I mean, I could live here because it's 70 degrees.
Well, and the skies are so blue right now.
Blue here. And yeah, call Josh Heisa on the team at Keller Williams, 901-461-8147, 901-461-8147. Flexible fees, no upfront costs, let you out of your contract at any time, risk-free. Just meet him, which is what I did, and you're immediately blown away. You'll be immediately blown away. Among the things that he offers is the instant cash offer. Kyle and Amanda took care of it. They took advantage of it. They were like, do we really want to go through the rigmarole of selling our house? Got to spend $20,000, put money into it to fix it up, and we got to have showings. And we invited Josh out. Josh comes visit, sizes it up, gives them a full cash offer for full market value of their home. They got 44 months to move, up to 4 months to move. Perfect. Thrilled with how it played out. He'll do it the conventional way, too. He'll market your home and have showings, and he'll tell you how to market your home. And if that's the way you want to go, he'll do that as well. It's Josh Heisa and the team at Keller Williams Realty. Again, the phone number is 901-461-8147. Josh has the buyers.com. Chris Harrington joins us on the other side. Jeff Calkins, Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.